Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Tuesday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. April 8th, 2025. We will take you all the way up to 6:15 tonight. Nats in action at 6:45. Charlie and Dave pregame at that time. 4+ hours with you on the Fan. Daniel, how are you?
Very well, my friend. Went to the dentist today. Got a lot of compliments on my teeth. I'm like, thank you? Like, I don't really know. This is what they are. I brush them and do the things you're supposed to do. But people were telling me like the structure was good and like you do a good job with the hygiene. And I feel this weird sense of pride about that. Like, I feel like, no one said I was handsome, or that I was in good shape, or like that I didn't have a desperate need for attention. They didn't like address the real stuff, but like my teeth were a little bit silly.
Makes you feel good.
It was nice. It's nice to hear nice things.
I don't have this happen, but I'd imagine there are people that go to the doctor and they have similar appointments where the doctor will say,
"Good job by you.
All your numbers look great."
Is that, yeah? Oh, mine are high. Is that good?
Everything's going swimmingly. You weigh less than you did last time you were in here, not more. Things like that. What are the important ones? The cholesterol, the blood pressure, the blood sugar, all those things. All those numbers are just wonderful. You're doing great. You know, those skinny athletic people that go to the doctor. Speaking of skinny athletic people, the NCAA tournament is over. The Florida Gators are national champions for the third time. They win the title in 2025 over the Houston Cougars last night. So the early story in this tournament after the first few rounds was the lack of upsets. And it turned into a big conversation, and the dialogue became, are upsets over now? Have we seen the end of the 15 beating the 2, the 14 beating the 3, the 13s routinely having a chance against the 4s because of transfers and the portal and, you know, the fact that if you look at like some of the upstart schools, Florida Atlantic or St. Peter's or any of these, all those guys, a year after they get to the tournament, are just going to be scattered about all over other Sweet 16 teams. So it would stand to reason that the rich are going to get richer, the poor are going to get poorer, the divide in the classes gets more substantial, the upsets subside. But here's the payoff and the benefit, I think, to that. Because there's no doubt, the casuals and just the majority of the people watching the tournament, Danny, want those upsets early. But if we don't have them, then there are more good teams remaining as the tourney goes on. And at the end of this thing, we get really good on really good. So there's not a risk of the 9 seed who's in the final 4 having the clock strike midnight and reverting to what they were all season long. And so you got really excellent games. Florida and Auburn was terrific.
Yes, it was.
Duke and Houston was awesome. And Duke choked, just like last night. I think Houston kind of threw up on themselves at the end of that game.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for them, it cost you a chance at a national title. But the quality of these games, the shot making for stretches, just the quality of the basketball, you can't do a lot better. And I think that comes back to the best were playing the best. It was all ones. It was Chalky Chalkerson. Mm-hmm. You know, the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight. It was basically to a man, certainly the Elite Eight on. It was like the eight best, the four best. The committee got it right. There weren't upsets, and so we got the elite teams remaining at the end of the tournament.
You remember, it's only a handful, right? St. John's lost maybe a little bit earlier than you'd think. Clemson lost in the first round. But it you're right. I mean, that's kind of the new phenomenon.
St. John's, real quick, was the only team not in the Elite Eight of the original
of the ones and twos.
Ones and twos. So, like, that tells you everything you need to know about some of the really good basketball we got in the last couple rounds.
Yeah, and where basketball was this year. So the thing you laid out at the beginning is the fear. That's what people are worried about. And my point all along is upsets are exciting as long as they're not totally 100% all the time. In other words, it's no longer an upset if it's routine for the 11 to beat the 6 every time or 60% of the time. That's not an upset anymore. That's just a game result, right? So keeping them rare or more rare isn't the worst thing in the world to me, because it means that, you know, it becomes more special when it happens. The other side of that coin, though, is if it never happens. If now we're just doing four number ones or three number ones and a number two, or, you know, the occasional three seed sneaks through. If there isn't parity in college basketball anymore, because, you know, the NIL money up at the top is going to dictate these things. Who knows how this salary cap that may or may not be implemented happens, or collective bargaining. Who knows what's going to go over the next couple of years. But this year, certainly, the top, there was a gap between these maybe three or four great teams, then another tier down for some teams in that 5 through 12 range that you could probably rattle off the top of your head. And then there's a big gap between everybody else. You could just see it.
I just always feel bad more so than I do happy in these games where I'm watching without a horse in the race for the kid that blows it. Now.
Yeah, I like the somebody wins it. You know
exactly
what I mean? Like, think of the UNC-Villanova game back and forth. UNC makes a huge play. Chris Jenkins comes down and drills it. Your heart breaks for the UNC kids. They didn't do anything wrong, but it's not you didn't even get a shot off and you just sort of had to watch the ball bounce kind of thing like Houston had last night.
You just know that with Duke and some of the moments they had, although there's a little less empathy for them around these parts, obviously. But Houston, when you jump up and then have to drop the ball and now you can't touch it, and the turnovers down the stretch, one after another, those kids are going to wear this for a long, long time. First chance for them, an opportunity, I should say, for their first national championship, and it didn't happen. But really, really good basketball. I got home last night just in time to watch the stretch run, got to listen to the vast majority of the second half. I was working the Nationals game and had Nats post game on the radio network. By the way, don't look now.
Don't you dare look now.
The Nats have won three in a row.
Here we go.
A winning streak. It has happened before. They beat the Los Angeles Dodgers yesterday, the defending World Series champions. Now, the Dodgers were at the White House, and they were celebrating their World Series all afternoon. I have to imagine that was part of why last night they looked awful. They committed a couple errors. They just weren't in any way playing the type of baseball that they played to get off their 9-2 start. You know, at one point in time, they were 7-0. Now they're 9-3. But give the Nats credit. Mackenzie Gore, quality start. 6 innings, 2 runs. He's got a major league leading 25 strikeouts right now after 3 outings. And James Wood hit a big 2-run home run the left center field. It was a wow moment. It was a left on left. No, I think it was a slider, but it was left in the middle of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a very high lofting, opposite field, cold night.
Yeah, ball wasn't really traveling.
Zero ability to push the ball out. I mean, Shohei Ohtani hit a ball that would have gone to the second deck in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, he came to the ballpark yesterday, by the way. Good
and
Lord.
It was only a wall scraper. I love watching him. I went and saw him last year, and he hit like 2 balls over 115 and 3 balls over 110 at Nats Park. In fact, we went and saw him, I think Toby, Darris, Ryan, and I, in Camden Yards a few years ago when he was with the Angels on a day where he was pitching and he was hitting, if memory serves. And he was a double shy of the cycle in that game. And then yesterday again, he was a double shy of the cycle and had an at-bat at the end of the game to try to get it. And luckily, Kyle Finnegan punched him out. But 3 in a row for the Nats. They've gone from 1-6 to 4-6. And if they can somehow steal a win from the Dodgers today, they take a series from the defending champs.
It is allowed. By the way, Kyle Finnegan threw 3 straight days, had to get 5 outs yesterday. So remember when Davey Martinez was like, I got to be smart about... Anyway, 3 straight days he's throwing.
What do you want him to do? They don't have a bullpen.
They don't have a bullpen.
Their bullpen stinks. His options are terrible.
That's true. That's totally true.
They either win yesterday with Kyle Finnegan throwing 32 pitches and facing the top of the order on his 3rd straight day, or they go to Colin Poche and walk the yard and
little,
lose the
a little Robolta piece to close it. I don't know, but it's just it's You're right. There's the desperate times, I suppose.
Weird when you spend no money on your bullpen, except for Lucas Sims for $3 million, who's been terrible.
And that
so
hasn't
far,
gone great.
How the bullpen without Derek Law, who's kind of one of the veteran non-closers, isn't that good. There's just not options. Yesterday, Ferrer was down. I mean, they really didn't have many options. They could have just stayed off Finnegan and possibly lost the game. But when you're there with a chance to win it, I think you got to just go for it and worry about it later. Now, he's potentially going to feel it for a little while. But now you keep him down for the next two games. It's going to be really hard to win those two games with the state of the bullpen, obviously. But you got to strike while the iron's hot. You had a two-run lead in the late innings, and you're watching Lucas Sims give away the game. Hey, Kyle, let's do this thing. It was their first five-out save since 23 months ago, May of 2023. Hunter Harvey did it.
Had a five-out piece? How about that? Yeah. So, but it's a lot more fun when they're competitive and winning. They got a little help yesterday, as you referenced. But Mackenzie Gore was pretty good.
Very good so far, man. Two excellent home starts, one mediocre road start, but the bulk of the work now over three outings, an ERA in the twos, and
strong. Your
major league leader in strikeouts off to an all-star caliber start, which is good to see from the ace. Saw this today on ESPN.com. Mel Kiper gave answers to some of the draft questions, some of the burning questions about the NFL draft with his two-round mock that he just put out this morning. For the Washington Commanders at number 29, and this is non-trade mock, by the way, so you stick and you pick. He has them taking an edge, which should surprise nobody. He's got them going with Shamar Stewart, the defensive end out of Texas A&M. Big kid, man. 6'5", 267 pounds, 21-year-old native of Miami, Florida. Shamar Stewart's really interesting because nobody seems to know where he's going to be drafted. He's one of these defensive ends that you look at some mocks and he's going 13th, 14th overall. Then Kiper's saying, I thought about having him as high as 17 to Cincinnati, but he ends up falling 29 to Washington for me. I would bet against him being available.
I would too.
Based on the athleticism and just some of the physical traits. But here's the problem, and I think this is why there's some thought that maybe he'll fall. He's one of these defensive ends who just doesn't get sacks in college. That doesn't matter to everybody, but if it matters to teams at all that you haven't been able to finish and get quarterbacks on the ground, then you'll ding them for that. A total of 4.5 sacks, Danny, over three seasons.
Like, that's almost impossible, by the way. When you're getting snaps, it's not like he was a part-time player at different moments or whatever. Like, he played. He was on the field. Not getting that few is almost like a space-eating nose tackle who's, like, not allowed to cross the line of scrimmage based on your scheme might end up with that. That's a crazy low number.
Again, not in one season. 4.5 sacks in 3 years at A&M as a freshman, sophomore, and junior. He had 1.5 sacks each of the last 3 years. To me, that's a red flag, I'll be honest. It's just alarming. It's not like, by the way, he had 11 tackles for loss. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like he was unbelievable against the run, or you know, he was crashing and hitting backs. He had 4, 2, and 6 TFLs, so 12 in 3 seasons to go along with 4.5 sacks. I'm not solely ever going to, you know, ride or die with prospects based on counting stats, but I say that to tell you, when you only have 4.5 sacks or 12 TFLs through 3 years, I do have some tough questions for you to answer when you sit down with me at the combine.
It's one of those things that scares you. Now, at the top of the draft, right, you would be, if he was the highest rated defensive end at the top of the draft, just bear with me, I couldn't do it. I need some level of production that matches the athleticism, matches the incredible combine that he turned in. I mean, his raw athletic scores are off the charts. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's agile. He looks the part. And I got to go, okay, well, what happened on the tape? What happened in these games where you're not dominating? You should be dominating at that level of athleticism. Who knows what's going on? Is it a coaching problem? Is it a bad habit? Do you have a tell? Is there something that is amiss here? In the 20s, you're now maybe a little bit less picky. You're going, this is an upside play here. If we harness this lightning, you could turn him into a star. That's, I'm thinking of a team like maybe Washington, picking in the high 20s. This is one of those variable ones where it's about scouting versus some level of production. I always like having to explain inflated production. Like, hey, he's in a goofy offense where all they do is throw horizontal and his guys are better athletes. I'd rather explain away hyper production than lack thereof. You know what I mean? When I'm drafting guys. It's just my own proclivity.
What do you mean hyper-production?
Meaning someone who has inflated numbers based on, well, he's playing in the Big 12 or he's playing bad defenses.
But why would
defenses.
You have to explain that away?
Meaning I'd rather have to water, like if I'm talking about evaluating a prospect, right? A quarterback who has gaudy, ridiculous numbers against a guy that didn't, like a Daniel Jones versus somebody that had awesome numbers. Daniel Jones had crappy numbers in college, but it's like, well, here we're explaining this away. I would stay away from Daniel Jones. I would default to the guy that had incredible numbers.
You would default to the guy with the better numbers than the worst numbers.
More often than not. But that's
yeah,
not,
me too.
Well, that's not what scouts do. Scouts will go, well, look at this. Look at Daniel Jones. All the attributes. He looks great. I'd rather have him than maybe than the Tommy Changs of the world throwing horizontally a million times. So I'd rather have to go, yeah, okay, I understand the caveat. These numbers maybe come with an asterisk. Then where is my dominance at the lower level? Like, I just, for my own proclivities, I need that dominance. He didn't do it.
Yeah, I don't know if scouts necessarily, I don't know if I completely agree with that, but I certainly get your point that, like, they're looking for boxes being checked, size, athletically, looking for traits, and maybe the numbers matter less. As an example, Dwayne Haskins threw 50 touchdowns in the Big Ten,
mm-hmm.
right? When he threw 50 touchdowns at Ohio State, all of a sudden everyone's eyes get bigger and they go, this dude can sling it.
Yep.
But if you watch him, he doesn't move. He didn't move that well coming out. He wasn't like overly athletic or a guy that was going to make a whole lot of plays with his feet necessarily. And so maybe he was not liked to the same extent, even though he had the numbers. I guess that's, you know, fair along the lines of what you're talking about. But I don't know. Do I want them to take a defensive end? Yes. If Shamar Stewart's the best available, would I have any problem with that? No. But this does again speak to the fact that I have been hell-bent on trying to move this pick in a deal for Trey Hendrickson. And I just point to this, because mm-hmm. this is the latest
right.
claim that I can make, which is Mel Kiper saying you're going to get a Shamar Stewart-like guy here. And the argument is, well, he's young, and he has upside, and he's cheap. And I would say, yeah, and he might not get any sacks. You know, give me the guy that is proven. Give me the guy that I know will go get 15 of them. If they're available at 29, there's probably five-ish edges that have gone before them. It's because they've got some holes in their game. I'm not pretending like it's the fourth round, but we ain't picking sixth anymore around these parts.
Everybody's going to have a wrinkle at that point. Now,
sure.
In this draft. Now, maybe not other drafts, but this one isn't thought of as deep. Look at a guy like Mike Green, for example, out of Marshall. Every attribute you'd want, the production that you'd want, you'd go, hell yeah, there's apparently some potential baggage there. So, again, there's a variance on where he might end up. Somebody might take a chance thinking their culture is great in the teens. He might be on the board there in the 20s. Everybody's got something that isn't ideal. Otherwise, they'd be that top 10 pick.
The other option they'll have is just trade back. And I think it is probably going to be complicated for them to find the perfect dance partner sitting at 29. But as I said earlier in the month, I really do believe, as we sit here now, 16 days from round one of the NFL draft, that Washington, because they're picking three picks left in the first round, they'll be able to get somebody to come up to get the fifth-year option for a rookie. Because the way it works, for those of you that don't remember, is if you're taking a rookie in round two, you get 4 years of the rookie contract before that guy gets paid. If you take him one pick earlier, 32 versus 33, you get the full extra year on a rookie contract, even though there's growth and it's a little bigger than the rest of their deal on the fifth-year option, before you really allow them to break the bank. So,
but it's still very affordable.
Absolutely. I think somebody comes up and is willing... especially if they're trying to get a quarterback that fell, or
well, speaking of that,
you know, wide receiver maybe.
Jalen Milroe got invited to the draft, which I'm kind of going, probably a second rounder, but maybe there's enough pulse that that's not what's going to happen. So that may be the candidate where someone does a Baltimore Lamar Jackson type move going, he may not be a first rounder, but it's worth it to us to take the risk because that fifth year option is so valuable at a premium position.
Possible.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I think you look at the positions that cost the most money.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the spots where teams are going to leap. So quarterback, now wide receiver, where you got a $40 million wide receiver for the first time. Maybe even edge. You know, Washington is a team sitting at 29 that could take one. But if mm-hmm. they, let's just say they don't love whoever's available and they want to move back, they may also feel like they don't have the luxury of taking a player at 29. If the comparable grades of someone they could get a 29 versus 38, let's say, and they can move back and pick up another pick, they may have to do that because they're down to the five selections. But this will be our poll of the day, Metropolitan Moving and Storage. You can go vote on this right now on Twitter, at 1067TheFan. With pick 29 in 16 days, would you rather Washington take an edge, a weapon on offense that could be a wideout or a running back, or trade back? And again, we don't know who's going to be there, and that's going to ultimately dictate what they do. But just philosophically, they've got to have a blueprint when they go into round one of the draft. How do you hope that they're viewing it? What would be your number one preference? Defensive end, a offensive weapon, or trade back? You can go vote 1067 The Fan's social account. Plus, we'll take your calls. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on that? We're Grant and Danny on The Fan. The G&D poll of the day is posted, presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage, local, long-distance, residential, or commercial. Three decades of best-in-class service and experience. Mel Kiper put out his two-round mock today. He's got the Commanders taking an edge. He believes at pick number 29, they stick and they grab Shamar Stewart, the defensive end from Texas A&M. The question we're asking you guys is, what would you prefer, defensive end, offensive weapon, or trade back? You can go vote now. This is what Mel wrote for the pick for Washington. He said, Stewart's draft stock is hard to predict. As I mentioned earlier, I considered him for Cincinnati at number 17. He comes off the board here 12 spots later, though. It's the same dilemma the GMs will be struggling with on draft night. Stewart has all the talent in the world, speed, explosiveness, power. But he also only had 4.5 sacks over 3 seasons. We just talked about this.
That's right.
That is a red flag. Goes on to say, if an NFL coaching staff can help him put it all together, the upside's immense. I'm betting on Commanders coach Dan Quinn unlocking that potential. Dante Fowler Jr.'s departure in free agency means there is a hole opposite Dorrance Armstrong on the D-line. It is nice, not just that Kiper feels good about the coaching staff, but that I feel confident for once that we can actually groom and develop talent. Like, there was a time for a long time around here where you couldn't draft a guy like Shamar Stewart
right.
and expect to get more
anything.
Out of him
yeah.
or, you know, tap into the sack potential. But I think he's right. With Dan Quinn and Joe Witt and the defensive line group, Ryan Kerrigan, Daryl Tapp among them, I actually think he's right that this is a pretty good coaching staff to try to take an athlete who's got all the starter kit, speed, explosive power, all those things, and then turn him into a stat compiler.
That's the design, right? That element of player development is something that you see once in a blue moon. Every once in a while, you get a Terry McLaurin, right? Who's a third rounder who blossoms and, you know, that I suppose takes advantage of the coaching or whoever's there, but turns into a star. That doesn't happen around here all that often, right? You get guys that either come in with the pedigree and they can already do it, or, you know, it's sort of rare that it would happen. More commonplace, I think, in good programs, and you'd like to think that's what this is now. So you could take someone that's a bit more of a clay mold and turn him into something really, really good. I'd have more confidence in them than, say, the Rivera era.
What's your answer to the poll? You taking an edge, you going weapon, or you trading back?
It's weapon for me. And I know that's probably going to go against type or against the majority of the people. They're going to say edge rusher or trade back. To me, this is a philosophical thing. I look at what happened to Houston this past year, and that's kind of my roadmap. Year one, what Washington just did mirrored them. In fact, superseded them. Year two for Houston was disappointing by every account. They went and added a bunch of pieces, and C.J. Stroud stepped back a little tiny bit. I think that's a schedule thing. It's a league adjustment thing. Defensive coordinator staying up late thing. I want to make things easier in year two than they were even in year one for Jaden Daniels. So I think it's special and wonderful and awesome and all the good things. To me, if Matthew Golden somehow was there, I would go crazy. I think Tet McMillan's going to be gone. I see a lot of variance on where Golden might end up. I've seen him in the 20s at times. If he's there, great. That's what I'd be excited about. But I don't know. To me, one more wide receiver to kind of complement the group that you had instead of going, let's give these touches to Jamison Crowder. I'm trying to make it as easy as possible. I think they've done an awesome job now with trading for Tunsil and sort of improving two spots on that line. I would love one more weapon to help this offense.
So I'm going to try to have my cake and eat it too, I think. I'm going to trade back for sure, and that's my answer to this poll, is that at 29, I'm coming back several spots to add picks because I've only got five, and I'm only picking twice in the top 125, and I'm only picking three times in the top 200. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's just not enough quality football players being added to what is an old team, essentially.
Yep.
I mean, they sign a lot of guys that are on 1 or 2 year deals that are deeper into their career. This is my opportunity to add some youth and some upside. And if I'm just taking two players in the first 3.5 rounds, that does not butter the bread for me. So I'm going to trade back from 29 with an eye on getting an edge, getting a running back, getting a receiver shortly thereafter. So if I can move back from 29 to, say, like 40, and I could pick up two picks in the first 125, I think that would be perfect for me. Because while getting an elite weapon at running back would be cool, you know, if Omarion Hampton, as an example, fell, it would be really hard for me to trade back. I'd probably take him. I don't think he's going to be there. I think Genty and Hampton both come off the board. I think I could probably take Henderson, you know, at 38, 40, wherever I'm picking, after I trade back if I wanted to do that. I may feel like I have to go edge there, and then later I go with Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State or Caleb Johnson from Iowa or, you know, another of the running backs that could go in the second round. But I'd like to get to a point where after I trade back at 29, maybe I trade back one more time at 61. And so it's a quantity over quality thing. But I think that you can get what you want, Danny, the wide receiver that can help, if you draft well in the third round where Terry was. Now, are you better off drafting in the first round? Probably. Although I would say the late first round.
This class is probably going to have three guys going
exactly.
The first round.
And I think late first round for receivers is kind of a dangerous area anyway, if you look at it. Like in the late 20s, I don't know how often those guys end up being the really, really good players. But we've also heard, and it's been a few weeks since we had a draft expert on, but remember we had a couple of guys on that said the difference in this class between like 20 and 50 is not that substantial. So I think it might actually be the perfect year to be able to trade back at 29, get your receiver, get your running back, get your edge, and just add more overall.
That makes a lot of sense to me, honestly. That's probably the most prudent approach, right? And my view depends on a guy or two falling that I don't know how likely that is. So to me, that would be my 1A, if not even my full-out second choice, because it takes pressure off, in my view, right? When you're sitting there with only a couple of picks and X number of holes, you get a schlub like me, and they don't view it this way. They'll probably, you know, stay, this is what our board said. We stick to the board, best available. But for me, I'm sitting there going, look at the glaring need. Here are the three glaring needs, and I've got three picks to do it. Whereas last year, you could go, here's a bit of a luxury pick. We're going to take Johnny Newton. We don't need it desperately right now this minute, but we're layering, and it's going to come in handy. We got a need at corner, enter Sandwich Toe. We got a need at tight end, potentially, and you know, who knows how that's going to go. But you know what I mean? Instead of saying, I've had free agency, I've got way fewer salary cap dollars to allocate, and I have fires that I have to put out right now, there's less pressure when you've got more picks to do it. You could start taking some of those luxury items.
It's been 6 years, so I'm not even sure that this is, you know, the best way to try to get a feel for what you could get. But Washington traded up to the back end of the first round, if you remember, to get Montez Sweat at pick number 26. And when they did that, they gave up pick 46 and a second round pick the following year. So it was, you know, the equivalent of the pick that they gave up and then 46 and the pick the following year. I don't know how much I'd be interested in something like that on a trade back, in fairness. Like, if I'm trading back, Danny, I want picks this season. Because part of why I'm trading back is, as I said,
I need the right now.
I think it's important to add youth to this team. I have no problem with the veterans that they've signed because I think that, A, it worked last year, and I think this is what Adam Peters kind of wants to do. It elevates your floor, makes it harder to be really bad. But I also think it's the way of the league now, where there's just not as many really good players coming available younger in their career. But I'm not going to trade for, you know, to move down 20 picks this year and add a second rounder next year. This is not about next year for me. Nothing about this offseason has really been about next year, in my opinion. when you go get Deebo Samuel for 1 year, when you bring in Laremy Tunsil the way that they did, the picks that you've given up for Marshawn Lattimore, who's got 2 years left, it's about this coming season.
I agree with you. I mean, the window at least is now-ish, right? In other words, if it's not this year at a premium, maybe it's next year. But the point is, this is all short-term thinking, right? Which is fine, because you've got the window now, and Jaden Daniels has already crossed that bar of, yep, it's worth going all in because that dude's awesome.
You can call us at 800-636-1067 like Mo did in Largo. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, bud.
Grant, I don't know if we're simpatico or I've just been listening to you guys so much that now I'm just starting to think like you. I'm totally with the trading back twice scenario if the opportunity presents itself. I understand that, yes, we do need another threat at wide receiver, and I'm with you there. But personally, I got my sights set on Ty Felton. And I don't believe we have to go high in the draft to get him. I think he's an exceptional playmaker, great route runner, exceptional hands. I mean, what else do you need from the young man? But we definitely need to address the edge rushing position, but we do need to acquire more picks. Because, like you said, it's an older team, and we need to build some type of foundation of youth for the years moving forward. Thank you, gentlemen.
Appreciate you, buddy.
So Ty Felton, for people that don't know, is the wide receiver from Maryland. I watched him a lot this past year. He's fantastic. Had a good pro day. He is the exact type of player I'm talking about. Now, whether he's available, whether the stars align, that I can't tell you. But coming off 96 catches for 1,100 yards, not being in the first or early second round mix, in my opinion, that's exactly what I'm talking about. A player like that, where if you strike gold and develop him, and we're saying we like their staff to develop a little bit better. They added Wes Welker yesterday to the wide receiver room.
They did.
Was going to help them continue to coach these kids up. Like, there are guys like him that you can get who will help your football team in mid to late round two, maybe round three. Another guy I'll tell you that I really, really like is Bashaul Tutin, this running back from Virginia Tech who ran the fastest 40 among all the running backs at the combine. He ran for 1,159 yards and 15 touchdowns this year. This is not a player that is in the first round mix. I don't think there's mocks where he's going early to mid second round. Again, these are just local guys that I watched a lot.
Sure, that you got to see, yeah.
That I think could help them a ton as a non-draft expert. And I know they're going to be available in rounds two and three, so to speak. So I think that's going to be there for them if they need it. And it's why trading back is a perfect solution for me. If they didn't have only five picks, then yeah, stick and get your edge. Stick and get your wideout that's better than Ty Felton. But I think Felton can play in the league for a long time. I think Tutin's going to be a really good back for a long time. And there's several guys like each of them at their positions that are going to be available in the mid rounds.
The only thing I worried about, if you add extra picks and start layering in a smart way, which we're all talking about, I'm not sure about the Ben Sinnott situation, kind of as my glaring example. I've got veterans that are very dependable, and I've got this veteran-laden team for my window right now. And if I'm trading back for a third-round receiver, like, I need time to develop that guy. Is Noah Brown getting those looks? Is, you know, name that other veteran that's TBD going to get some of those chances instead of him? That's always the hard part about trying to win right now. I mean, the Caps have done it, but most teams have a hard time either kind of walking in the middle of the road between rebuilding and competing at a high level.
Speaking of the Caps, Ole the goalie Kolzig joins us at 3:30 today to talk Alex Ovechkin. And the ratings just came back on Ovi's record-breaking day on Long Island for the national broadcast, and they're pretty darn juicy. I mean, it's a big number. We'll get to that next on The Fan. Ole Kolzig joins the show today at 3:30, and we've got a chock-full Beltway Blitz for you at 4. At that time, we'll cover the Caps, the Nats, and the Commanders. Grant and Danny, welcoming you back on The Fan. It was a record-breaking day for TNT's hockey coverage. Turner Sports' NHL coverage over the years has been a success, but their biggest games have always been the Winter Classic contests. On Sunday, with Alex Ovechkin chasing history and scoring goal number 895 to move past Wayne Gretzky as the league's all-time leading goal scorer, Danny, 1.3 million viewers were tuned in for the big moment. The game itself averaged 905,000 viewers, which is a substantial number. It's not a massive number, but for a regular season hockey game,
yeah,
is very significant on a network cable channel. So TNT, biggest regular season game for the NHL non-winter classic that they have had ever for people tuning in to watch Ovechkin, which is some evidence that people still care about records, I'd say.
I would say so, right? I mean, when you start adding up a couple data points here for hockey, and this is why I wanted to bring it up, that's just an American TV network, I believe. I don't think TNT goes to Canada. The reason I bring that up is, remember the Four Nations tournament that seems like ancient history, but wasn't that long ago, drew over 16 million viewers across North America, 9+ million in the United States, and over 6 million in Canada. So don't look now, but it feels like hockey is, as the young people say, is having a moment. People are tuning into hockey. This has been a pretty good little run here for the NHL, with, again, Ovechkin's record tumbling. I mean, the chase could have extended into next year. We lost some momentum there. Nope, sorry. He just has too much of a flair for the moment. Basically scoring in 7 straight games or whatever it is to put him right there. And now all of a sudden it seems like this is kind of like striking while the iron's hot, where hockey's kind of moving in a very positive direction. The NBA, while still a topic of conversation constantly, I mean, the amount of coverage and inundated we are with it, is not having a very good PR time at this moment, right? Where, I mean, just look at the dichotomy of coverage. Ovechkin does something amazing, the celebration is great. Otani does something, the celebration is great. Pat Mahomes or any NFL quarterback does something, the celebration is great. Like, LeBron and Stephen A. Smith are yelling at each other. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I've seen those tweets.
Yeah, yeah, like, or whatever it is. Like, yeah, it's not a great time for hoops. No, I'm not suggesting
hockey's... People are making fun of the NBA because it's like, Wayne Gretzky's there to honor him. And, you know, they're going through all these other sports and how they handle these records. And they're like, you know, LeBron does something and Stephen A. Smith challenges him to a fight or whatever.
Yeah, whatever the meme is.
Apples to apples, but...
Right, and I'm not suggesting...
It's a funny zing.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting hockey's going to take over basketball as the second most watched sport in the country. That's not the case. Simply saying, there is some positive momentum for hockey right now at the moment, and I wonder where it leads.
I think there is positive momentum for sure. I think it's a couple of one-off amazing things more than it is sustainable or growth. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, the salary cap's exploding. That's indicative of a much healthier sport. I mentioned this yesterday when we had Ted Leonsis on the show. He was very good. If you missed any part of that, you can grab that at thefandc.com or grantanddanny.com and go listen to Leonsis. But I thought it was interesting that he signed Ovechkin to a 13-year deal, Danny, for $9.5 million a year. And then at the end of that 13-year deal, Ovechkin got a 5-year deal for $9.5 million. Like, think about that, mm-hmm, compared to the NFL as an example, where 13 years before your contract, you get a contract, and now, still on top of your game as a superstar, you sign a 5-year deal, but you get the same AAV. Well, that would never happen in the National Football League because the cap is skyrocketing, and now it won't happen in the National Hockey League either because finally the cap is growing. But there was a long time where there wasn't any significant major growth. I think that is fairly... telling.
It's indicative,
about the league. But Four Nations was huge. I think it will lead to some new fans. I think it will lead to some momentum. I just don't think it's sizable. I don't think it's necessarily notable.
Because, you know, we talk about all the time with the Olympics, and then usually, but really the World Cup is
World
what happens.
World Cup is the best example of this, where the numbers are going to be massive again in 26, especially in this market. The DC TV market loves the World Cup, right? No doubt about it. We're going to, as a city, watch that thing, get obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. People like me that don't watch soccer the rest of the year, or in some cases for 3 years at a time, will be infatuated and waking up early and setting my alarm. But it's for the event. You know, the Four Nations was the event. I don't know that anybody necessarily who doesn't like hockey is still to this week watching games because of that. But the Ovechkin game, and the reason the league put it on a pedestal correctly, I thought it was the right thing to do, it was a moment. Mm-hmm. It was history. We like history. We like records. You know, if I knew that in tennis, some unbreakable record was falling, and I saw everybody tweeting about it, I would probably click over to see the pageantry and the celebration and what's going on and who had the record and who broke it. There would just be some human intrigue there.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what happened.
Yeah, I think there's a big part of that. So, for example, like the Masters this weekend, and I don't care at all. I don't know anything about it other than I know it's this weekend and the junks are going to talk about it a lot. But, like, if somebody was about to set the record for something, that and it wasn't just, like, bogeys in around, but, like, something meaningful, like a career achievement thing, and it was close, you're right. I'd be far more likely to tune in than now, which is not likely at all.
Records are probably less important now than they've ever been societally. I don't know why that is. It just feels that way. I think they're less hallowed. I think there's maybe it's just that I'm older. I don't know. But it seems like there's less intrigue and fascination behind them. But the record number of people that tuned into the game, 1.3 million for a regular season game on Turner, which isn't even to speak to how many people watched on Monumental Sports in D.C., how many people were consuming in other ways, content, ESPN Plus has carried some of these games with some exclusivity and things. I mean, the chase was monitored by millions of people, but it tells you that this particular record still resonated, which is cool.
Yeah, I think it's a smart point about records. I think there's now so many more options to get content. It used to be like when I was a kid, you had your game of the week. And that was your game. That was the game you got. Now it's like there's way more at my fingertips, and I've got more data and more stuff. So, you know, it just nothing seems as special anymore when you're given everything in the buffet versus you go to the buffet with one item. Now that I've got everything at this incredibly special thing, nothing feels special anymore. But that one certainly did.
Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. An unnamed executive thinks Jaden Daniels could hit the wall this year, sophomore slump. I want to give you a thought on that. See what Danny thinks as we get ready for Ole Kolzig today at 3:30 on the Fan.